I'd be interested in how you, well, we can pick it up in the question time afterwards or the comment time, which is how easy that was. But it's easy to share information perhaps, but to connect with the emotion and find how that person really is feeling and what's underneath it, and to be able to empathise with that, that's a bit of a bit more of a challenge. I think in communicating within a relationship or a marriage, it's important to think about, well, what am I going to share and how? And then it's about the timing. There will be a wrong time to share and there will be a right time to share. I think some of these marriage books that we looked at were suggesting that the wrong time is when someone comes in the door from work or from an engagement and straight on to them, by the way, and that usually does not help effective communication. So it's a, again, it's about timing and it's about thinking and it's about almost the strategy of how to share and how to try and convey your emotion about it. In Proverbs 25:11 it says, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Proverbs 25:11. A word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. So when you find the right words in the right time and convey it in the right way, it is like apples of gold in settings of silver. It's something beautiful and jewel-like and precious. It's also about striking a balance between nursing your wrath to keep it warm and sharing a thought out and measured response. It's getting that balance right about letting go of your anger and your emotion if you can, and defusing the situation, then giving a measured response and saying, look, this is the situation, and if you can, this is how I feel about it. As I say, like apples of gold and settings of silver, a word that is aptly spoken is very important. And as I've been saying, listening is equally as important. It's important to stop what you're doing and actually pay attention and really focus on the other. An example from our own life, Margaret was working part-time for someone in the neighbourhood. He produced a magazine. It was a man called Mr. Fraser, and she would get down to Mr. Fraser's house every morning, let herself in, go to the office, start her work. He would have the radio on in the background. He would change channels for some reason about 9, 10 in the morning, come downstairs and connect with her in the office. So this day I'd been out doing driving lessons. 4 or 5 pupils came in. We had lunch together. And Margaret said to me, I don't think Mr. Fraser is all that well. He's playing odd music for him on the radio. He's not switched channels today and he's not come down. Well, I didn't listen because I was too busy decompressing from the morning and thinking about the pupils for the afternoon and the evening. So Margaret went back and the radio was still playing a different station from what would normally be on. Mr. Fraser's not around. Long story short, he died in the night. His wife was away on a course somewhere. He had died in the night. He was lying dead upstairs. He had died during the night. So Margaret had to then deal with a dead body. And what she was trying to convey to me over lunch was, I think he's ill or he's dead. Can you come and help me here? And I'm not paying attention. I'm not really listening. But she dealt with it because she's a mature person and she's capable and she dealt with it. But that's an example, maybe an extreme example, but it's an example of paying attention. Mm-hmm. You've got to listen, and you've got to listen to what's actually in the words and between the words. Mm-hmm. And I was not listening. I don't think Mr. Fraser is all that well today. And I went back to work and she went back and she had to go and deal with a dead body. Mm-hmm. Proverbs, again, it's full of so much wisdom, as you know. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and shame. We've all met people like that. Before you've started telling them, they've got your answer for you. He who answers before listening, That is his folly and shame. They've got the answer. They know exactly, even before you started explaining. James 1:19. Take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, for man's anger does not bring about righteousness that God desires.
Is there somebody there?
So the other thing in communication about sort of bad habits, do you switch off? Do you lose attention? Do you finish sentences? Have you perfected the put down? Do you interrupt? Do you switch off and pay attention somewhere else? So how hard is it to give your full attention, to stop what you're doing and really listen? Communication. There's an example in one of these books we looked at. It's quite interesting when you think about it, because if you think about how you might respond yourself, then what the book suggests is the better response. This is the example they give. Husband comes home, the wife says, "The children have been driving me mad. They've not stopped crying and arguing all day. I'm at the end of my tether." Most people, I think, and one response would be to try and problem solve. Right, now here's how you should manage the children. Here's how you should deal with that. But what the book suggests, if you really listen to the emotion and really engage with your partner, then the better way is to respond on the lines of, "That must have been really hard for you. Tell me what it was like for you. And how did you manage? And what can we do about it?" And then get to the solutions, if there are solutions. The book is suggesting too many men, and indeed too many women, would immediately try and solve the problem, instead of really listening and saying, "Okay, that must have been really hard for you. Tell me about it. What was it like for you? And what can we do about it? Can we find a solution?" Similarly, a wife might come home and share problems at work. Maybe somebody's been absolutely difficult in the office, some difficult people, or a difficult situation. Again, it might be so easy to offer a solution. But the better response, again, is, "How does that feel? What is it like being in that situation? And what can we do about it?" For example, when Margaret got promoted into the private office at the Scottish Enterprise, she suddenly realised she was in a world of politics, and the person actually controlling the office was the appointee from the Scottish office. And if you didn't get past that appointee and weren't on side with the appointee, who was a political appointment, then life became difficult. And long story short, she eventually had to leave. And we had to work our way through that, leaving, giving up, and then finding agency work and part-time work and stuff like that. But that's the kind of thing that happens. It would be very easy for me to maybe say to her, "Well, you've got to go through your representative, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to challenge that situation." But the better solution was just to listen to her, support her through it, and let her come to her own decision, and then make that a shared decision that she was going to leave and we were going to do something different by way of keeping her working and keeping her sane, if you like. I'm almost finished. Finances and legals, families, couples don't like to talk about these things, especially when you're preparing for marriage. They think, "Well, we're young and we don't need to talk about finances and legals." And most couples and individuals even put this off because it may be something they don't want to think about. But is there a will? Is there power of attorney? You can even have a power of attorney which is set up with what's called a springing clause, so that it is not active, but in the moment of incapacity, it is easy to go to a court and pay a fee, and the power of attorney becomes effective immediately. So is there a will? Is there a power of attorney, or one with a springing clause? Is there a document in place for what happens to the children should both become incapacitated? Who gets to look after the children? Which granny, or is it auntie, or is it somebody else? Couples don't want to think about these things, and they don't prepare them, and sometimes they're left in a bit of a trouble when trouble comes. Are both equally on top of the finances? And could one take over the bill paying if they had to? In most relationships, one will be good at the finances and keeping on top of things and all the household stuff, but that does not allow the other to switch off and leave it. I was almost caught out when Margaret was seriously ill in hospital and in high dependency for months and months and months, and not really compass. And I'm the kind of bloke who doesn't do technology or anything, and I certainly wasn't doing the finances. So PIN number to get money out of the bank, what are you talking about? I don't know. So I'm stuck without PIN number. Didn't really know how to use the credit card properly. Certainly couldn't find the bill in order to pay the bill. I was in a real guddle, but I got through it and managed to sort it out. That's because I switched off, stopped paying attention to the finances, and wasn't really clued up about the practicalities. So eventually got that sorted out, and that taught me a very valuable lesson. But I'm so aware that couples have not learned that lesson, and one does the finances and the household stuff, another is quite happily letting it happen. But if something should happen, you are in trouble. And you need these legal things. I mean, the Scots law is different from law in England and Wales, for example, is different from law in other jurisdictions. So inheritance is not automatic and not easy, and relationships are complicated in the eyes of the law. So I always advise couples, and they always say, no, it's not for us, don't want to know about it. So I'm just saying. The other important thing in this practical area is basically not in front of the children. I was struck by a story that Marie told some time back about her brother who pastors a church in Denmark. As you know, he and his wife were looking back on a difficult situation at church some years previously. And their son commented that he did not know there had been a difficult time and a challenging time. He knew nothing about it. That's because not in front of the children. They had not discussed the situation in hearing of the children, and they found time and space to talk about it together on their own. And the children never knew the pressures and the difficulties and the challenges, not in front of the children. My parents, God bless them, never learned that lesson. As a child, I had a very strong memory of them discussing how the rent arrears on the house had reached a level we were about to be evicted in 10 days' time. Money had to be borrowed to stop this happening. They thought it was okay to talk over me, and that I wouldn't be paying attention, and I wouldn't understand anyway. But that resulted in me having to get prayer eventually as an adult for a poverty spirit, because that's how it impacted me and other conversations like that. You grew up aware of lack and of how precarious the family situation is. So it's so important. It's so easy for emotions to run away, and you start dealing with things and talking about things in front of the children, and you really shouldn't be doing it in front of the children. You've got to protect them. It's not for their ears. So effective kingdom relationships. This has been a start. It's not the last word. It's barely the first word. It's a beginning. I hope it's helpful. I hope it's giving you food for thought and to go away and discuss. And I hope it's achieved what you thought it might achieve. It's an evolving thing. This talk was slightly different from the previous version, but that's okay, I think. The next time, there's about four talks, there may even be more than that, but there's at least four talks, somewhere between me and the Holy Spirit and whatever. The next talk is almost ready. It's about boundaries and pressures from family and friends, and how do you separate out from parents and and friends and circles, and how do you leave and cleave together, and what are the challenges and the pressures on that? So that's the next one. It's really about setting boundaries and establishing boundaries and how you communicate across those boundaries and maintain good relationships, but also say, this is us and this is our marriage and we're one unit. So effective kingdom relationships. Here endeth the lesson. What we did for questions afterwards, and it worked quite well, was that we just passed the microphone around. If somebody had